We have a very full day ahead of us. And one of the few ways I know of staying on schedule is to begin on schedule, something that I think we have slightly failed to do already. For those of you who are uncertain, I would like to inform you that you're at the National Academy of Sciences here in Washington, and it is our hope that you'll be able to join us for a small libation as a reward at the end of the day, perhaps on this terrace. If we have rain tonight, it apparently will be late, and spring in Washington, as many of you know, is a happy time. I'd like to welcome you to the meeting on behalf of the Board on Science, Technology, and Economic Policy. On behalf of myself and my colleague, Dr. Stephen Merrill. Many of you are familiar with our work, and as some of you know, the Board on Science, Technology, and Economic Policy for some time has been working on how we accelerate innovation, how we can improve American competitiveness, and how we can cooperate with countries around the world and improve our nation's economic performance and understand that of others. We have news that we now have a new chairman, Paul Jaskow, who is going to the president of the Sloan Foundation. He'll be in a distinguished tradition of gentlemen like Larry Summers, who for some reason found other employment about a year ago, and of course Dale Jorgensen of Harvard University. The work that we've been doing in this area, as we joke among ourselves, the force seems to be with us these days, in that many people are now looking at public-private partnerships. We are pleased that Gordon Moore, the chairman emeritus of Intel, spent time with us. But we've also focused on innovation in global industry and patents in the knowledge-based economy. We have ongoing work. Something that's important in this town, you know, we often talk about the global economy and then we somehow get completely tied in inside the Beltway. Just looking at what the rest of the world is doing and what we can learn from them, not necessarily to emulate exactly, but to appreciate the scope of what they're doing. You'll hear from the Vice Minister for Science and Innovation. It's a nice title, isn't it? Vice Minister for Science and Innovation from Spain. Later on today, Spain is a struggling country these days, I'm told, and they only have about 4.5 billion euros that they're devoting to their innovation agency. That's roughly current exchange rates, a gazillion dollars, and it's very significant. We're also grateful for a number of us in the audience and indeed on the podium that the volcano waited one more day before it went off, or there would be major gaps around the program. I think the people in this room understand that innovation is absolutely key to the progress and indeed security of the United States. What we've understood in our work, and I think many of you appreciate, is the importance of collaboration among small and large businesses, universities, research institutes. It's a process that can't occur alone. One of the themes that we'd like to encourage this administration to consider is the importance of using proven innovation programs where they exist and developing new ones where they do not. I think that this administration has shown a firm and continuing understanding of the role of innovation as a source of both jobs and growth. We were delighted when President Obama joined us in April of last year to talk about increasing our national R&D rates. But one of the things that struck many of us here in the community is that he talked not only about increasing support for science, but the importance of innovation. And speaking of science and innovation in the same breath is something of an innovation. Many of you here are also familiar with the Valley of Death. We're putting a lot more into research, and the challenge, therefore, is just how we can bring that research across the absence of early-stage capital. We're looking at SBIR today, but we're looking at SBIR in broad terms. both about what works and what other tools may be needed. Dr. Gansler will address that in just a second. These are some of the things that we're looking at as part of our second phase assessment of the SBIR. For those of you who have not yet read our first assessment, we have a small shopping bag, and you can pick up 10 or 12 volumes to take home with you. Any of you who are interested in SBIR will find it valuable, and any of you who have trouble sleeping will find it helpful. There's a range of things that we need to look at. The program, along with STTR, is running about 2.8. It'll soon hit $3 billion a year. And even in this town, every $3 billion deserves some understanding and evaluation, and that's what we want to do. Today's symposium is designed to look, as I mentioned, at the Valley of Death and highlight the role of federal innovation programs, how they can help small companies convert our research dollars into the products and processes that help us address global challenges in climate and in health and in security. We also want to look at some of the state programs, because the federal programs do not operate in a vacuum. The synergies are extremely important. And we want to put some particular attention on the challenges faced by women and minorities in obtaining early stage funds. As many of you know who have been entrepreneurs, it's the first money that is the hardest money. And that's where the federal programs can be particularly important. Lastly, I'd like to urge you to participate in the discussion. We have allowed time for discussion, and if our speakers are disciplined, as I will shortly have to be, we should have time for discussion. We know that many of the people here bring a rich experience. We'd like to thank the agencies that are participating in the program, in particular NASA and the National Science Foundation and the Department of Defense, who have made this meeting possible. We'd like to extend special thanks to the National Economic Council for their interest and support in the meeting. And we are particularly pleased that you are here. We honestly believe that your interventions, your observations, your suggestions can be a valuable contribution to our understanding of the program and to national policymaking. It is now my pleasure to introduce the Honorable Jack Gansler, who has served faithfully as our chairman for this mega study for a number of years. He is a prolific author. He is a distinguished professor at the University of Maryland, and in his previous incarnation, he had the non-trivial task of running technology and acquisition at the Department of Defense, which at that time I think was only $160 billion. And now, as part of the peace dividend, it is $360 billion. So with no further ado, Jack, it's pleased to welcome you.
Yeah, if only the SBIR program could double in the same way that my old budget did, it'd be fine. Okay, what I want to do is very quickly just go over the phase one effort that we went through, and actually my hair was black when we started that effort. It was a long effort. But the books are all out there, so I feel I can go through it quickly, but just to set the stage for the rest of the day, which will be looking ahead. This is primarily looking back somewhat. There's no need to emphasize to this group the opportunities in terms of the importance of the economic growth and all of the major issues of the time, energy, climate, health, and security. I also don't need to emphasize to this group the importance of small business in terms of the innovation, the stimulation of the economy, and so forth. While in general this is accepted, there are very few areas in which the specific objectives of this program get the appropriate emphasis, and that's what I think is so important about this program. And as Chuck mentioned, I think it's important to view this also on a global basis. There are a lot of other countries that have increasingly been looking at the SBIR program, learning what we can. I mentioned last night when we had a small group that I had a good friend from Singapore who came over to spend 6 months over in Silicon Valley to learn how America does innovation. And he went back to Singapore saying, the thing that I think I wanted to implement in Singapore is the SBIR program. The inverse of that maybe is the UK program, where they have something very equivalent, except it's voluntary, and it's not nearly as successful as ours, which is mandatory. So there's a lot of international comparisons here to take advantage of what's on this chart, namely the opportunities that come from small business innovation. Again, I think this is pretty obvious what the reasons for doing it are, and that this can be quantitatively demonstrated in terms of the value of the small business. Nonetheless, there are major barriers to the small business. We don't do this on purpose, but that's the way we do it. We set up a lot of legislative and regulatory requirements for firms to do business with the government, and if you're a small firm and you don't have the 12-foot long shelf of the federal acquisition regulations or don't happen to have your five lawyers to interpret it for you, it's a big burden for you. And so trying to figure out ways to help the small business to do business with the government, and I think you'll hear a little bit of that from DARPA later on in terms of maybe use other transactions authorities or other ways of trying to deal more in a commercial-like fashion with the government. But it's clear that the major problem for a small business is funding, and that's the area that this program is really focused on. Capital markets, you talk to the venture capitalists, they want to have higher confidence. It's a risk reduction effort, and so they want something that's already gotten some first steps at least. And that's a major problem. But on the other hand, when I talk to the VCs, what they all say is, this is a great filter. Use the SBIR program as a filter. Once you've gotten the demonstration that there's a customer, there's an interest, there's essentially an evaluation that's taken place, these are firms that I'm interested in, particularly as they get to phase two, not initially necessarily in the phase one. This is where the dollars have gone, and as you can see, a relatively small percentage at the startup phase. This is what Chuck was talking about in terms of the Valley of Death. Clearly, the big problem here is getting across that, and that's one of the purposes of SBIR. Program has been around for some time. And it was based on the fact that it has been around for some time that Congress asked the Academy to do an assessment. Not is it of value or not as much as are there things we can learn from it in terms of lessons learned that could improve it even. It's been a relatively stable program because, as I said, it's a mandatory percent. And as the R&D budgets, particularly during the last 10 years, or so in the Defense Department have been growing rapidly. You take a percent of that, and you can see how this can grow as well, and in other agencies similarly. The real focus of this is getting it started, the proof of concept activities, going through the prototype phase, and how to help firms to get through that and then pick up venture funding is really the issue. It's, as Chuck mentioned, around $2.5 billion a year, and that has been growing. And of that $2.5 billion, over $1 billion of that is out of defense. It's the 800-pound gorilla, if you will. And this is clearly a highly decentralized program. Each agency, and even within those agencies, the sub-agencies, all have major programs within it that are focused on their individual needs. And that's important to recognize that they all have different needs. And therefore, the program, fortunately, is a very flexible program tailored around the needs of the different agencies and around the objective of those agencies, in some cases mission-oriented, in some cases simply research-oriented. This was the question that the Congress asked us to assess. We did a very large effort, even for the Academy, in terms of the surveys, and so here we were subject to the typical academy reviews, in fact, an excessive academy review, I might comment, it took a long time and lots of them, and it's because of the size of this effort and the importance of this effort. And it included not just the survey of the people who got the awards, but also the program managers and so forth, and then a number of case studies to try to understand better what the responses that we got back really meant. And we consulted with the agencies considerably on the interpretation of what we had heard. Good-sized team, and most of the deliberations were around this question. You know, does it work? What do you mean? How do you interpret what it means as does it work? What are the objectives? And how do you relate that to each of the various agencies' objectives? Clearly to stimulate technological innovation, but to commercialize. And an important issue here is how it's managed within each of the agencies. And one of the restrictions here is that the money that is set aside for this is for research, not for administration. And yet you want to be able to administer the program and learn from the program as you go along, and especially, for example, when you do experiments and try new ideas, did they work or didn't they work? How much of a payoff do you get from them? And where is the money going to come from to do those evaluations? When you came in, you were overwhelmed by the volumes of books that were out there. This was the result of our activity, a summary report, one for each of the five big agencies that we were asked to look at and who contributed to this activity, which we appreciate, and then some specific problem areas or issue areas, I should say. NIH had questioned whether if a VC is a significant funder of it, are they still a small business, that kind of question. Fast tracking, because time does matter in these efforts. And diversity of the programs, should they all be the same when they're all different, when they all need to be different, that kind of issue. Bottom line, bumper sticker, if you will, we found that it was very sound in concept and very effective in practice and should be continued not only at its current level, but even if there were more money put into it, it could be very effectively used. It's still a relatively small effort when you put it in perspective. As I said, even for DOD, when it's $1 billion, that sounds like a big number, but out of $700 billion, it's not such a big number. Congress had specified a set of goals, and that's what this is list here. And clearly, the commercialization is the objective, and I should emphasize that commercialization includes also the government using it, not just in the private sector. So it's a combination of, if, say, NASA funds something that is useful for NASA, then shouldn't it count as commercializing if it gets used by NASA? And so the conclusion is yes, that's part of the market, and that's commercializing. And then the more it can be dual use, the better you get the total benefits, commercial and public sector. And as mentioned here, one of the objectives is the minority disadvantaged, women-owned, so forth, and to meet the real government needs, not just the overall commercialization needs. As I mentioned, because the agencies are different, because they have objectives that are different, we think it's a virtue of the differences, not something that should be a cookie cutter, everybody has to do it the same. On the other hand, the metrics being used ought to therefore match what the needs are for different agencies, and they do. This was an area that we looked at because we thought it was important, and increasingly the universities are replacing some of the national labs that used to exist, you know, the Bell Labs and so forth. Increasingly the universities are foundation for much of the research, and therefore we thought it was important to look at the links between the universities and industry, and we were pleased to find, based on the data, that there's very strong linkage, as you can see from this data, between the universities and the smaller business activities. Okay, going now into recommendations that came out of our study. Program flexibility should be maintained. This is one of the questions we were asked, and very clearly you want to take the best practices from each. If some of them are doing it by computer and some are still using pencil and paper, you know, obviously introduce that distinction. But in other cases where one agency needs, for one reason or another, to do it somewhat differently, fine. But take the best practices across the board and try to get information disseminated, which we found wasn't being done as much as it could be done. Another area we found very important is experimentation. Try some new ideas and see if they work and evaluate them. And then if they do work, try to spread that across overall agencies. Some were, for example, funding a 2B phase or something of that sort. Does it work? If it works, let's see what other places can do. And continue to evaluate. And one of the areas we did find that there wasn't much evaluation being done was in this last category. And we felt that that's something that, in some cases, the data weren't even being gathered. But in other cases, there was not enough of a focus on that objective, which was one of the stated objectives of the Congress. And certainly, we want to take full advantage of the total population, not just half of the population. So it has now been decided to do a second phase. We're using mostly the same group that took this on in the first phase, so we have that accumulated experience. And this is what we're going to be looking at. Where are we? Where should we be? Can we do more in the evaluation area? And particularly, how do we accelerate the program? How do we streamline the program? How do we fill in the gaps? One of the things that I would constantly be getting emails from some of the small businesses saying, you know, I really got a good evaluation, but I'm waiting for the next phase of funding, and I'm tired of raiding the Coke machine. I can't get any more money. How do I pay the next phase? You know, I need some rapid transition through the various phases if I'm successful. Gap funding. Application process, how long does it have to take to get through that process? It's really important that it be, a speedy process. And any other areas for possible improvement or expansion of the program. We did recommend to the Congress, for example, that inflation has occurred in that 20-year period, and they should adjust for that as an example. As I said earlier, women and minority being a focus of this next phase, university linkages, but also how does that link into the STTR program, which is explicitly set up for the university programs. There's a lot of state and federal other efforts that are going on in the same complementary activity. We want to make sure we take advantage and link those in to this. And then the post-award assessments and the efficiency and effectiveness of those. So, with that, I'm going to just suggest you, as Chuck said, if you want some light reading for a summer evening, there's six volumes out there that you can pick up to give the details behind what I just went through. But this is sort of a scene setting for the rest of the day where we're going to look for ideas, and I want to encourage ideas from all of you. If you're standing in the shower tonight afterwards and you get a great idea, send me an email. You know, that's where it goes. Okay, well, thank you very much. Chuck, you want to?